know I've said this before, but there's a lot of derivative crap on social media. Lots of selfies taken for the purpose of recycling cliche advice. Plenty of formulaic stories told for the purpose of performing vulnerability. Oodles of trend-jacking videos posted for the purpose of getting some small slice of the attention pie. It's repetitive, and it's boring. And I have nothing but compassion for 99% of it. Considering I've done these same things, I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't. But the proliferation of bad copies on various social media platforms begs the question, is it possible to make a TikTok video, Instagram post, or LinkedIn update that's remarkable? Is it possible for repetition to be an asset, for repetition to even be remarkable? When I first started thinking about remarkable content, one of the objections I wanted to be sure to overcome right out of the gate was the idea that remarkable would necessarily mean long, complex, or fancy. I wanted the concept of remarkable content to encompass any kind of content that sought to do something more than attract a fleeting moment of attention. Remarkable content shouldn't have some ridiculously high barrier to entry. There's no reason for remarkability to be inaccessible to the high schooler who has a great idea, or the person between jobs with a story to tell, or the adjunct professor who has an interesting take but absolutely no extra cash. I'm Tara McMullen, and this is What Works, the show that rethinks work, business, and leadership for the 21st century economy. Today's episode is the next in my series, What Makes This Remarkable? In each episode in this series, I'm investigating why certain content, serious or silly, feels remarkable to me. My goal is to uncover ways you can think about your own work and how to make it more compelling, whether you work with data, code, words, pictures, or people. Now, normally, I release this series for premium What Works subscribers with a meaty excerpt for free subscribers. This week, though, I'm going to try something a bit different. The whole piece is available free, and then tomorrow, I'm sharing our remarkable homework and welcoming comments and discussion for premium subscribers at whatworks.fyi. Now, becoming a premium subscriber is just $7 per month or $70 per year, and it gets you access to a whole archive of premium content and live workshops. Go to whatworks.fyi to upgrade. That's whatworks.fyi. So, what does remarkable content look like on social media? Well, one way I think it looks is like a gimmick. Let me explain.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Frankie's Cultural Observations. Today, we're going to be analyzing people pleasers.
Frankie McNamara is the remarkable creator behind Frankie's Cultural Observations, a series of short videos on TikTok and YouTube. Frankie is very Irish and in his late 20s, right on the cusp of the millennial and Gen Z generations. Frankie's made videos about
people who talk in elevators, girls that believe in crystals, but introvert, centrist dads.
People who are just being honest.
When Sean first introduced me to Frankie, I'll admit that I totally didn't get it. Frankie's videos look like classic man on the street fare. Think Billy on the Street with Billy Eichner.
Hey guys, it's Billy, and now it's time for a segment I like to call How I Met Your Lightning Round. As you all know, I'm very upset because the wonderful show How I Met Your Mother has been canceled after only 9 seasons. So today, How I Met Your Mother star Neil Patrick Harris and I are going to run around the streets of New York and see how New Yorkers are coping with the end of this terrific show. Are you ready, Neil?
Let's do it.
Here we go, let's go! Miss, How I Met Your Mother's ending.
My what?
How I Met Your Mother is ending.
I can't believe it. Oh my God.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil, I'm so sorry.
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
But what's Colby Smulders gonna do? Colby Smulders, Colby Smulders. Sir, How I Met Your Mother is ending.
What?
For a dollar, who would you rather meet, your mother or Neil Patrick Harris?
Patrick Harris.
He's right here.
I didn't see him.
You didn't see him. He's standing right here.
The humor of the man on the street format often comes at the expense of the person being ambushed by a celebrity with a camera crew. Now, unfortunately, I get really terrible secondhand embarrassment. So the humor of the format, if we can even call it that, is hard for me to take. But despite initial appearances, Frankie's videos are not man on the street style. The strangers he stands beside with a conspicuous microphone rarely talk. They're set pieces. Now, not quite set pieces, more like the subjects of sociological observation. Because, well, that's actually exactly what they are, and I'll get back to that soon. Once I saw a few of Frankie's videos and could trust he wasn't ambushing anyone for laughs, I started to listen to his monologues. They were smart and funny. And wait, was that a Foucault reference? Wild. Frankie doesn't just describe cultural phenomena for laughs. He offers searing critique with an Irish brogue and unwaveringly flat affect.
Swifties come in all different variations, but they're usually overrepresented by highly organized girls who have a good relationship with their father, always remember people's birthdays, and find it incredibly easy to justify why it's okay for Tay-Tay to single-handedly blow a hole in the ozone layer with her two private jets. Taylor Swift is a projection of the idealized, empowered self. Swifties now have permission to seek liberation and verbalize how their boyfriends are disgusting pigs because a pretty white girl told them it was okay to speak now, Taylor's version.
Frankie explained to Paper Magazine's Brandon Tausig that he is indeed studying to become a sociologist, and he's currently enrolled in a master's program. His first cultural observations video was about a particular look he saw many of his male college classmates sporting, a look he dubbed, descriptively, skin fade North Face jacket combo. He told Tausig, quote, I used some of the social theory I learned in my sociology class to critically analyze the skin fade North Face jacket combo through the lens of the Frankfurt School. Okay, that's remarkable. Now look, I am a total theory nerd. You know this. So Frankie's approach seems tailor-made for me. But he has garnered a huge following with millions of views across the series. He's a veritable celebrity in Ireland. There's something about Frankie's cultural observations that appeals to people who've never read Benjamin, Adorno, Horkheimer, or Fromm, which, of course, is the vast majority of people. So I want to think about why that is and how we might apply it to our own work. When I first began to consider Frankie's videos critically, I was drawn to the idea of the TikTok video as a distinct medium. However, Frankie's videos aren't only on TikTok. They also work on YouTube, which is where I watch them because I am a geriatric millennial. And while his YouTube views aren't quite as high as his TikTok views, his channel still has a wide viewership. Then I considered other creators who make videos of similar length and consistency, but whose content is completely different from Frankie's. And two channels I watch came to mind. One, Sandwiches of History, and two, Girl with the Dogs. Sandwiches of History is the brainchild of Barry Enderwick and features a different sandwich recipe from vintage cookbooks each day.
Welcome to Sandwiches of History. Today, from 1001 Sandwiches of 1936, we're going to be making the Los Angeles sandwich.
Girl with the Dogs, aka Vanessa DeProfetis, showcases pet grooming sessions with an extra dose of cute and a side of useful information.
Some of you may remember her as the tiny, wiggly, and adorable puppy named Butters. When she first came, she was 8 weeks old, but now she is a full-grown adult. They grow up way too fast.
For those of you who are keeping track, when I say big following, here's exactly what I mean. Frankie has 436,000 followers on TikTok and 228,000 YouTube subscribers. Sandwiches of History has 308,000 TikTok followers and 28,000 YouTube subscribers. And Girl with the Dogs has 6.6 million TikTok followers and 2.6 million YouTube subscribers. Each of these three series features videos between 2 and 5 minutes in length. They use roughly the same structure in each video. They are literally repetitive. And something about that repetitiveness transcends any one platform. So I want to propose that the medium these creators work in is the gimmick. Now, I don't mean gimmick derogatorily. There's no judgment for me in that word, at least in this case. And yes, now I'm going to do the whole consult a dictionary thing, just to be safe. A gimmick, according to Merriam-Webster's second definition, can be an important feature that is not immediately apparent, an ingenious new scheme or angle, or a trick or device used to attract attention or business. And all three versions of this definition are apt for our purposes. So here's a working definition for the gimmick as a medium. A gimmick is a non-sequential series of works that utilize a novel scheme, angle, or device to explore a network of ideas. We'll get to the network of ideas and the non-sequential nature of a gimmick in a little bit. But let's take a closer look at the novel scheme, angle, or device first. Now, I gotta tell you, I freaking love a gimmick. I love a formula. I love a conceit that acts as a creative constraint. I love social media accounts that have committed to one thing and stuck with it in an almost rigidly consistent way. And the consistency itself is an important feature that is not immediately apparent. Because upon viewing one or two videos in a series, you won't notice the pattern. For instance, Girl with the Dogs uses the repetition of certain phrases in a way that makes viewers feel like they're in on the joke. Or maybe it's in on the cuteness. Especially in her earlier videos, each grooming session was completed by her saying,
"I shave out her paw pads. And of course, I trim up her Grinch feet."
It's lovely. The ingenious scheme or angle is inherent in the form. For Sandwiches of History, that means choosing an odd sandwich recipe from an old cookbook every day, preparing it, eating it.
Okay, let's give this Los Angeles sandwich a go.
And plussing it up with other ingredients. Yeah.
So the original Los Angeles sandwich, tasty. I do wish there was butter or mayonnaise on it, but it was still a flavorful sandwich. I'm going to give that 7. Plussed up with the Johnimans cherry pepper mayo and the hickory smoked cheddar cheese, that's like an 8.5. That is tasty. I'm definitely going to finish this. I'd make it again, of course. All right. See you tomorrow.
For Frankie, it's the juxtaposition of socially awkward reportage with incisive cultural commentary.
People pleasers have a strong desire for in-group harmony and a fear of social conflict, which means getting them to stand in this video was the easiest thing I've ever done.
And as for that last part of the definition about the trick or device that attracts attention or business, I don't think I need to elaborate on the success of each of these three creators. We are talking huge platforms. Frankie's cultural observations have a very simple form. Cultural subject plus social theory plus deadpan delivery next to the assumed subject. Girl with the Dogs also has a simple form. Introduce cute pet, give pet a bath, share information about process or breed, and then groom pet. Sandwiches of History's form is also simple. Identify sandwich, identify its origin, make it, taste it, plus it up, rate it. To me, the consistency of the gimmick is reminiscent of formal poetic verse like sonnets and haikus. Bear with me now. I will admit that I find formal verse puzzling. For that matter, I find all poetry vexing, which is not something that I'm proud of as an aspiring public intellectual. But really, what's the point of limiting yourself to a particular form, a particular rhyme scheme, or prescribed meter? So I asked Google, which pointed me to an excellent explanation by poet Rebecca Hazelton on the Poetry Foundation website. Hazelton argues that writing in formal verse is a critical practice for poets, even for poets whose main work is free verse. Well, that certainly caught my attention. Practice is definitely a key word for me. Practice, she explains, is more than repetition, even though repetition is critical. In fact, the practice of formal verse has two complementary purposes. One, isolating a technique for study, and two, engaging with difficulty. The gimmick can be a practice of those ends as well. By keeping the form consistent, Frankie is able to practice social theory as a technique. He isolates his application to a tiny cultural subject and applies social critique to phenomena that the founders of the Frankfurt School wouldn't have dreamt of. Further, Frankie wrestles with difficulty by finding a way to squeeze big ideas into a small mass media package. The gimmick gives us a way of isolating a node in the constellation of thoughts we might have on a topic. With the gimmick, as with formal verse, repetition leads to something remarkable. Honing a technique leads to something remarkable. Challenging oneself as a creator, writer, or artist leads to something remarkable. Now, although gimmicks are often derided as cheap or contentless, the gimmick as a medium has real communication value. Now, I think it's safe to say that Neil Postman, a highly influential media theorist who died in 2003, would abhor the gimmick. But Postman's theories are useful for thinking about the value of the gimmick. So hopefully he's not rolling over in his grave too hard. Postman argues that as a new medium develops, it introduces a, quote, new orientation for thought, for expression, for sensibility. So from oral traditions to printed writing, from print to radio and television, from broadcast media to social media, new forms of conveyance have changed how we think, feel, and express ourselves. Postman argues that the ubiquitous presence of television disrupted centuries of thought based on printed writing. Instead of the logical, linear, and rational thinking installed in our brains by reading and writing, television ushered in an era in which we could only think if information or ideas were presented as entertainment, presented as amusing. He believed that the vocabulary of the television medium began to dominate all other media and forms of thought. Think best-selling books, college courses, and magazines. Now, it is hard to disagree with Postman here. What he feared has come to pass. You only need look at the election cycles in the U.S. to see that. But I'm not entirely willing to write off what we might gain through image-oriented media like television. Now, we're quite familiar with the cultural and democratic limitations of image-oriented communication. We know what social media has done to public discourse. But at the same time, I am really genuinely curious about the benefits of these media. Are we able to express ideas today that we weren't able to express in the 80s when Postman was writing, let alone in the 18th century? My answer is yes. The gimmick represents expression in the mode of networked thought. Print communication reinforces linear and mechanistic forms of thought. Television is episodic, which might not be exactly rational, but it's still linear. The gimmick, though, allows us to poke at broader truths from various angles. Philosopher Byung-Chul Han describes today's culture as a constellation. Instead of a solar system that has a gravitational center holding it together in predictable patterns, today's hyperculture, as he calls it, is full of possibilities and events which, instead of gravitating towards each other, only whiz around. There is no central narrative, no steady hand, no guiding force. And he writes that this is felt as a painful void. A painful void. I think that's so true. But at the same time, this also makes possible a new practice of freedom. There's a lot to be gained from linear, rational, or narrative sense-making. Clearly, we've gained a lot from it. But I think there's also something to be gained in the freedom from rationality and narrative. This freedom may even allow us to describe the global, networked world we live in today more accurately. Gimmicks play at intertwingularity. That's intertwingularity, or the inherent interconnectedness of everything. Ted Nelson, who coined the terms intertwingularity and hypertext, wrote that everything is deeply intertwingled. He observed that hierarchical and sequential structures are typically forced. We squeeze information and ideas into these very rational structures. And these rational ways of arranging information don't really reflect reality, even if they're useful in their own way. Nelson also notes that our preference for hierarchical and sequential structure took off after the invention of the printing press. And so in that way, he echoes Neil Postman's argument. However, Nelson sees the potential in media that allows for intertwingularity. The web, itself a metaphor that invokes intertwingularity, finally allows us to embed the links between ideas, sources, and data in infinite ways. That's hypertext. And many of us tend to think in hypertextual ways, even if our communication has to be linear and rational. A similar idea comes from the authors of the Clue Train Manifesto. They wrote, "Hyperlinks subvert hierarchy." Hyperlinks, or hypertext, give us a way to present connections without reducing them to a sequential structure. They explain that, quote, "Hyperlinks are the connections made by real individuals based on what they care about and what they know, the paths that emerge because that's where the feet are walking, as opposed to the highways bulldozed into existence according to a centralized plan." Hypertext, therefore, also implies a hyper-rationality. Hyper-rational, in this case, does not mean excessively rational, but beyond rational, transcending rationality. And that brings us back to the gimmick. The gimmick is a hyper-rational medium in this way. It explores an idea in a multitude of variations and iterations. It doesn't try to reconcile those iterations or produce a grand theory or arrange them in a hierarchy. The gimmick has no gravitational center. It acknowledges the connections between subjects without binding those connections to mechanical logic. Postman argued that our modes of communication have the strongest possible influence on what ideas we can conveniently express. That is, the modes of communication we use make some ideas inconvenient and others convenient in terms of our ability to share them with others. And further, Postman believed that what ideas are convenient to express inevitably become the important content of a culture. So it's true that printed texts make rational linear thought convenient to express. One word after another, one argument after another. Very convenient. However, printed texts do not make it convenient to express the nature of networks. In a network of ideas, in intertwingularity, ideas are connected to other ideas not by logic, but by metaphor, by inference, rather than coherence. Social media, on the other hand, makes it very convenient to express ideas in a network. And gimmicks specifically make engaging with a network of ideas more convenient. Their brevity and consistency offer a way into a thought network that might be otherwise overwhelming. And gimmicks can teach us about connections we might not have otherwise made. Now, I don't know if the gimmick as a medium is here to stay. Probably not. And even if it does last, any instance of gimmick will naturally come to an end sooner than later. I don't know what the gimmick's ultimate influence on how we think will be. It's much too early to even guess. But I do believe there is something to be gained from seriously engaging with gimmicks, even when they're hilarious or awe-inducing. Because for as silly or as unserious as any individual gimmick may be, the gimmick gives us, if not a language yet, a form for thinking in networks. Getting better at networked thinking, whether we call it abstract thinking, creative thinking, design thinking, systems thinking, or hyper-rational thinking, well, it's a key skill in the 21st century economy. So long live the gimmick. And may your work be as remarkable as Frankie's.
Problems. All introverts have a rich inner world. Their brains are so creative that they have the power to ruin their own day, even though nothing's wrong, just by thinking about things that aren't real.
I want to invite you to Rethink Work, a new cohort-based course that I'm teaching starting on February 22nd. During our 8 weeks together, we'll rethink beliefs about work-life balance, productivity, data, passion, purpose, and the path to success. I designed this course to reveal brick by brick how our beliefs about work and our identities as workers create the work reality we exist in so that we can tear those bricks down and build something better. You'll gain both the critical framework you need to notice outdated beliefs and apply those frameworks to make practical changes to the way you work every day. To get all the details, go to rethinkwork.club or click the link in the show notes. That's rethinkwork.club. What Works is a production of Yellow House Media, a podcast production agency for people changing the way we think about culture, creativity, leadership, and work. Our production coordinator is Lou Blazer. Our production assistant is Emily Kilduff. This episode was written and edited by me, Tara McMullen. Marty Seafelt is our audio engineer, and Sean McMullen is our fearless leader and executive producer. What Works is produced on stolen land. We're grateful to the Susquehannock and Conestoga peoples who stewarded this land for thousands of years before the arrival of white colonists. The Yellow House is on the unceded land of the Kutanaha Nation and the tribes of the